Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, joined by my brother Darren. Today on our show, Janelle, what are we talking about here? Crop desiccation or boron? I got both down as topics today, but you know what? I think we could cover both, Darren. When it comes to boron, there are a lot of micronutrient questions we get all season long. When it comes to crop desiccation, we're down to the end here, and I, in fact, got a question yesterday on Milo, and should I desiccate it because I want to make sure that everything is finished up for the season. So we'll talk about both things as we go throughout the show today. If you've got any questions for us, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right. Oh, so our producer, Janelle, tells me desiccation is actually our topic tomorrow. Let me just say this, though, as a lead into the desiccation thing that we'll discuss tomorrow. As I am driving around the countryside, as usual, when we get toward fall, I see a lot of variance in fields. There are some spots that are getting close to being ready, and then there are other spots that aren't anywhere near. So that's where we get the question about desiccation. Basically, what that means is to kill everything off so it's all evened up so you can go out there and harvest without a lot of challenges. So we'll be covering that tomorrow. Today, let's focus on boron. Boron is one of the most important nutrients in the plant that, let's face it, doesn't get talked about a whole lot. And when it does get talked about, usually what people say is, ooh, if you overdo it, it can be toxic. Well, guess what? Everything can be toxic to the plant if you overdo it. So boron is no different. It's just that it doesn't take a lot of boron in some cases to cause some negative reactions. But you know what? I could say the same thing about phosphorus. You put too much phosphorus in the furrow. I mean, like, let's just take 10-30 furrow. If you put 5 gallons or 7 gallons in furrow, you know what? Sometimes we see terrible crop injury from that. So I think that's overdoing it, and you got to be nervous about that. In fact, I'm way more nervous about 10-30-4-0 than I am about boron in a lot of applications. So we want to talk just a little bit about how to apply boron. We'll discuss liquid and dry, at plant, pre-plant, post-emerge, lots of different ways you can put boron on that crop. And what we would always encourage you to do is check out the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. That's going to tell you how much a given crop needs for each and every, well, I shouldn't say every nutrient, but most every nutrient. So let's just take corn, and let's say we're going for big time yield of 300 bushel corn. When you look at boron, the grain removal takes 0.72 pounds of boron. The stover takes about 0.08 pounds. That's it, so not much. But anyway, the whole point is 0.8 pounds of boron is what you need for a 300 bushel crop. Now, boron's leachable, so it's not going to stick around forever. So let me just ask you, are you putting on 0.8 pounds of boron every time you plant corn? Are you putting on any boron when you plant corn? And, you know, quite frankly, soybeans need some boron. Alfalfa needs lots of boron. I mean, lots of different crops out there need some boron. I'm not saying you have to go putting on huge amounts or spending lots of dollars. But if you don't do something to address boron, you're going to have some issues. Here's one of the things I want you to look for on your farm right now. You can go out to your fields if you have corn. And if you see tipback on the ear, a lot of people are going to tell you what? They're going to say, well, you needed more rain, or you just planted a little too thick. Okay, so you got some tip back on the end of the year. What I'd propose to you is maybe neither one of those things is true. Maybe your crop was just a little short on boron. We find that boron is a big, big key to filling out the ends of the ear. So it's something for you to be thinking about. All right, Darren, any comments on boron as we start the show today?
You know, I just think back to the 1990s throwing in Solubor with all those PPO type post-emerge soybean killer or soybean
cobra. It was mainly cobras.
Yeah. And well, Cobra, Galaxy, there are a number of them. So Ultra Blazer. And I think about when we get nutrient levels right in the ground and in the plant with not just the N, P, and K and sulfur that we talk about a lot, but also the micronutrients, it gives our chance the best opportunity to succeed.
Our crop, no matter, the best opportunity?
Gives our crop, sorry, the best opportunity to succeed. You know, just...
Well, wait, explain more. So well, you're throwing it in. It's basically to reduce the leaf burn.
Reduce the leaf burn, right. And if you've got a healthy crop, you're going to see less issues. And it was interesting back in the 90s to throw in some Solubor with the Cobra. And yeah, one field, it worked great. We didn't see hardly any burn. The very next field that got sprayed, literally a half an hour later, same weather, virtually same time of day, everything else. Well, that one showed a lot more crop response. And what's going on out in the field? Well, there are nutrient differences as we go throughout each field. And of course, as we go field to field, fields with manure history may be drastically different than fields that don't have it and so forth. And when we look at crops, we have to remember how they're bringing in nutrients. They're bringing it in by pulling in water and pulling in those nutrients. And if they're short in those nutrients, they keep pulling in more water and more water. And when we get into especially stressful years like 2020 has been all the way through, but certainly with the drought conditions many of the areas across the country have experienced, now we've got plants that have become water wasters trying to pull that extra nutrient in that it couldn't find, and areas of lower fertility or even decent fertility, just short in one nutrient like boron that we're talking about today, all of a sudden become water wasters, and those crops dry out first. So do take a look at this as you're making applications of herbicides that may put a little stress on the crop, or as you're looking at, wow, what happened here? Is it drought stress? Is it sudden death syndrome? Is it iron deficiency chlorosis? Take a look at what's going on out there. See, is there something else that's limiting our plant as well? Why did our plants compete against the disease or against the bug or against the pest, or, you know, just handle the drought better in some areas versus another? It may be something like our topic today, boron. You may just be short in one part of the farm or another. So we're going to talk about how to figure out if you're short, where you really need to be for levels, and how to get it out in your crop on today's program. We'll also be taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
More choices, more money. With Bayer Plus Rewards, you choose from our broad portfolio of high-performance products. Earn more money on the eligible products that are right for your farm. And use our new portal to see your purchases, track your rewards, and decide how you want to use them. Visit mybayerplus.com to sign in and start earning. That's the advantage of more control in your hands. That's the plus.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift Nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the Endzone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. The Endzone monitors outside conditions to run your fans so your grain naturally reaches ideal temperature and humidity. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about boron on the show and also taking your calls and agronomic questions. 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us radio@agphd.com or you can find us on Twitter, @AgPhDMedia, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. So we're talking about boron, and you think, oh, that's just a problem in the Midwest. Nope. It's an important nutrient no matter where you're farming. Real happy to have Jerry Cunningham with us right now, JP Consulting down in New Zealand. Jerry, how are you doing today?
Yeah, good, thanks, guys.
We're doing well. Now, when you think about boron as a nutrient in New Zealand, is this one that a lot of growers are talking about? Is it one that is regularly being applied with the crops you're growing there?
Yeah, it definitely is. Boron is especially important. We talk about it a lot over here. We do a lot of fodder beet and bulb crops for our animals for grazing in the wintertime. So obviously boron, very important to stop things like sort of brown rot and things like that. But also becoming more important for our guys with talking about, you know, we're still growing corn and maize grain and maize silage, and the importance of that boron to fill those cobs out to the tips.
Yeah, Brian was just hitting that up about getting the cobs filled out all the way to the tip. And we're talking with Jeremy Cunningham with JP Consulting down in New Zealand. This is something pretty interesting because a lot of times guys will say, well, that must be, I did my population wrong. I put too many plants out there. That's why it's tipping back. But it could certainly be a nutrient like boron leading to that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And one thing I always say, well, with any micronutrient, you've got to make sure, you know, it's very easy to get excited about micronutrients and putting them on, but you've still got to make sure, firstly, I say to my clients, we've got to make sure we have those primary and secondary elements there first. But yeah, if you've got those there, then you start looking at those micronutrients as real cream on top nutrients, and things like some boron in that corn to get that corn full. Boron is also very important to take the starch out of the leaf and put it into the plant, and that's something that we see a lot of, that if you're lacking in it. The other real important thing from an environmental point of view over here, we're having a lot of pressure put on us around nitrogen applications. So we have a lot of grass and clover crops, pasture crops, and if we can get that clover nodulating and fixing more nitrogen, well, it helps us with less reliance on putting nitrogen out of a bag onto our pasture.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you're absolutely right. When we look at some of the nutrients that are being more heavily regulated around the world, nitrogen definitely at the top of the list, phosphorus another one. And so often the functions that are happening in the plant require micronutrients. And when we get the right balance of micronutrients out there, we can make our crops a lot more efficient. How about when you're looking at boron applications where you're at in New Zealand? I mean, obviously the climate there is, I would call it mild, Jeremy. I don't know how you would define it, but you know, when we look at where you're at right now, I mean, it's a cold day today in New Zealand for sure, but it's still not that bad. You're not like 20 below like we're going to be in the Midwest. So you've got active microbial populations throughout the year. Now, they're going to be a lot slower for part of the year. Do you see issues with leaching, with boron loss by putting it out too far in advance of the crop?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we are definitely mild compared to where you guys are. So obviously, you know, boron different to some of the other micronutrients that we've got. It is an anion, so it is going to leach likes of our sulfur and our nitrates. So we always talk about, you know, it's important to soil test to see where that's at. But remembering that if we do go and put the boron on early, that and we have a lot of rain, that we might still have to come back in with a secondary application when whichever particular crop you need is growing. So whether that's in with another dry, most of our boron is applied as a dry product broadcast, but it is times where we can come in with a wee bit of foliar for specific crops or another dry broadcast product. Which is important because you can leach it. But one important thing I would say with boron is it's very tightly linked with calcium. And if your calcium is very low, be very careful with applying boron. But also if your calcium is very high, which we can see in places, your boron requirement is actually higher. So you really want to be pushing that boron level up higher.
Oh, now that's a good one. I know we talk sometimes on the show about if you've got low calcium, you got to get that built up right away. It's really important, and it's going to safen a lot of things, like you mentioned, the boron. But the other side of that equation, we've got a lot of growers that we talk to that have really high calcium levels in soil, 85%, 90% base saturation calcium levels. In those cases, you do need more boron. And I think that was a great point, Jeremy. I appreciate that one.
Yeah. Like, so we're similar over here. Probably not quite as high as 85%, but definitely pushing up into those high 70s. In places, and in those situations, I'll be really trying to put boron, you know, aim up towards that more 2 parts per million if we can, and that sometimes if it's in a crop like so fodder beet or maize, might be that we actually do two good applications, you know, during the year to try and really push that boron as high as we can. It's also boron, if you look at it as all nutrients are working together with other ones, if you have boron, if you can get your boron level up and get your copper level up, you can actually stop a lot of rust and fungus diseases, especially in like so your wheat and things like that. So, yeah, it's a helpful one for there too.
Yeah, the disease fighting component of this is really big too. And we were just chatting a little bit earlier in the show about how various nutrient levels in the soil can influence so many things in the plant, and you go from one field to the next, or even one part of the field to the next. It's really important to understand, why am I seeing a problem in that area? And you mentioned just an interaction here with boron and calcium. Now you're talking about boron and copper and how they can work together to help stop some certain diseases. That's a big deal. And for a lot of our growers listening, not only do they want to stop problems, they want to shoot for some of those high yields like you guys are getting down in New Zealand, Jeremy. When you look at new world records being broken in wheat, and certainly you've got the world record in barley, and probably a bunch of other crops that I'm not even thinking about here. What is the key? What is the key to that? How are you getting that done?
Oh, we just live in the land of milk and honey. That's the key. No, I mean, we are very lucky in New Zealand that we live in a very mild climate. Like you say, we don't get extremely cold. We don't get extremely hot. We still have our dry periods, but the other thing is it's pretty mild climate, but we've got pretty young soils too. So we don't see a lot of soils where those crops are growing. We're not seeing those weathered soils like you guys have. So we don't have on some of those grain-growing soils magnesiums of 25, 30%. You know, it's a lot easier. Most of our soils, I explain how lucky we are in New Zealand, that we only have to add nutrients into our soil most of the time, where you guys are dealing a lot more with excesses, where you're trying to work out how to get things back down to get things into balance. So, I certainly don't envy some of the soils that I see coming out of the States.
Yeah, there's definitely challenges no matter where you're farming. We're talking with Jeremy Cunningham with JP Consulting down in New Zealand about boron and other things today. Jeremy, thank you so much. Really appreciate you being available. Really appreciate you sharing the information today as well.
No worries. Thank you, guys, and have a good rest of your day.
You bet. You as well. Jeremy brought up a number of good points there. And Brian, I think we talk a lot about the low calcium. You got to be careful. You got to have those calcium levels up. But I love that he also went to some of the extremes and made the comment, you know, some of the challenges that you've got in the Midwest and in the United States is we do have some excesses out there that also have to be dealt with.
Yep, that's for sure. So when you look at soil, you want to look at everything. And that's kind of why we're talking about boron today, because as we go into this fall season, a lot of people will get soil testing done. And you know what kind of soil testing most people do? NPK, and that's it. And that's really unfortunate, because sometimes your best dollar spent might not be on N, P, and K. Or part of your best dollar spent should be on a micronutrient like boron, some pH correction. Maybe it is addressing some of those excesses. So lots to talk about there. We'll continue with that right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
More choices, more money. With Bayer Plus Rewards, you choose from our broad portfolio of high-performance products. Earn more money on the eligible products that are right for your farm. and use our new portal to see your purchases, track your rewards, and decide how you want to use them. Visit MyBayerPlus.com to sign in and start earning. That's the advantage of more control in your hands. That's the plus.
When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Credit Extreme, the herbicide with dual salt technology that makes all the difference. Faster uptake, quicker rain fastness, and better control in variable weather, something we've all had our fair share of. When you need more powerful weed control for challenges like lamb's quarters and velvet leaf, with excellent safety to Roundup Ready crops, you need Credit Extreme. Nufarm and Credit Extreme, here to help.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean and weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetual, and its burned down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree.
In the power lines! Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Wherever you go, whatever you're doing, whenever you want, farm your way with Case IH AFS Connect. Now you can farm, share data, and manage your fleet however, whenever, and wherever you want. Learn more at caseih.com/farmyourway.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I hope that you're interested in boron, because that's what we're talking about today. And if you say, I don't want to hear about boron, I don't need to know about boron, wow, you're missing out. You really are. This is a nutrient that's really important for your crop. It's one of the essential nutrients, and you only need a tiny little bit. The struggle is, how do we get it there, and how do we keep our levels up where they need to be all throughout the season? We're taking your calls and agronomic questions. You want to talk about your boron strategy at 844-44-AG-PHD. I want to get some other ideas, though. So we've got Alan Perry on right now. He's up in Maine with the Farm Technologies Network. Alan, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Hey, thank you.
All right. So I think I get more questions about boron from growers who are pulling plant tissue analysis. And they say, man, I pulled this leaf set and everything's good. And then a week later, I put on some new leaves and I'm not getting boron into those leaves yet. It seems to be one of those tricky ones to keep supplies even throughout the growing season.
Yes. We're not using huge quantities of it, so you have to be quite precise with your measurements, and it's not much difference between excess and deficiency. I usually like to think of boron as kind of the forklift in the warehouse, if you will. The plant makes sugars all day through photosynthesis. It's the boron that moves everything around in the plant, mostly at night. And like the forklift in the warehouse, we don't ship the forklift with the truck we load. We keep it, and so it stays in circulation. But if you don't have enough, just like the warehouse with no forklift, everything gets bogged down.
That's a great way to take a look at boron. So when you look at that, if we've got to deliver that forklift each time we want to deliver those sugars, that means a lot of micro applications, no pun intended there, but a lot of smaller applications, smaller doses of boron. When you look at all the different crops that you're involved with, Alan, and certainly there's a whole bunch up in Maine, where do you see these applications being made? Are a lot of them going on soil applied? Are you having to go with foliar applications to try to keep delivering those forklifts of boron throughout the season?
Yeah, we're doing both. I think for your listeners, it's one distinction to make is which side of the Mississippi River are you on? East of the Mississippi, boron is water soluble, and so it doesn't stick in the soil, and we're pretty boron deficient. As you get closer to California, you become more boron excessive because the rainfall isn't as great, and the boron California is where the mine is out there in California. So it depends a little bit where your farm is, but here in New England, we're deficient, and the next piece is the more excellent the calcium level is, I'm not talking pH, but calcium level as a fertility unit, the more boron you can use and the more safety you have so you don't do damage.
All right, so we were debating this a little bit. We were talking with Jeremy Cunningham down in New Zealand about this, and he was making the comment that high calcium soils need to have higher levels of boron. Low calcium soils, you really got to be careful. And he kind of threw out that they've got some calcium in the 75 to 80 base saturation range. Certainly, we've got some even higher than that where we're at. What would you say is an excellent level of calcium? Is it high but not too high?
Without knowing more than what you just told me, ideally on our soil test, we'd like to have calciums somewhere between 60-something up to 72%. There is a best number for each soil, but it's in that range. 60-70% would work. If your listeners like to read, I know a lot of farmers don't have much time, but there's a book called Boron and Its Role in Crop Production by Dr. Gupta, Prince Edward Island, Canada, and he gives a lot of information on how to make use of it without overdoing it. We're using up to 3 pounds actual boron per crop year on potatoes here, but again, I wouldn't recommend you do that without having some sense of where you are and how it's working.
You know, this is one on our farm we've been working on quite a bit. We've got heavier soils. We've got a lot of our calcium now is in that ideal range. And we've been building up parts per million of boron, trying to feed our corn mainly, but also our soybean crops. Two parts per million, not uncommon now. 3 parts per million, maybe a target. We're seeing even a little more yield. We're seeing ears filling out to the end when we get it a little bit higher. What are you seeing with a lot of the crops that you're working with? Are they shooting for parts per million, or is it more about just delivering what we need for this year? Like you say, you can't hold it in the soil as well on the East Coast.
We're still using target numbers to give us a sense of how aggressive we can be. And then we watch the crop. When we get numbers like what you have, now I start feeding the crop and letting it tell me where we are, because parts of the field are going to be under and parts are going to meet. Perhaps be over one field different than another, but the crop will kind of tell you. Those kernels out on the end of the corn cob are a hint you're getting close to excellent. And we use our foliar sprays just to fine tune. We'll put down enough base level at planting usually to cover the big holes, and then we'll watch the crop and use our foliars.
Okay, I hear a lot of growers talking about just being concerned. They don't want to overdo it on boron, and certainly we don't want to get everybody fired up today thinking boron is your yield-limiting factor. It may or may not be. The only way to find out would be to do a good job soil testing throughout the field and throughout your farm, and also like Alan Perry here with the Farm Technologies Network is saying, get those soil parts per million right, and then let the crop tell you how you're doing so you can fine-tune that a little bit later on. As we're trying to fine-tune, how do you know if you've overdone it, Alan?
One of my clients early on, some years ago, a potato grower, challenged me to something that I thought was the best way to use boron that I've ever seen. He gave me a few short rows on a field and told me to use enough boron to kill them so that we could see how much it would take and what it looked like.
And because we've been working on our calcium, I put on 10 pounds of Soluble with a sprayer one day, and I didn't even curl the leaves up on them. So if you want to really find out what your situation is and are willing to sacrifice 100 feet of crop somewhere, just take your sprayer and experiment a little bit. You'll find that you might be a lot less sensitive than you think. If not, you're going to get a chance to see what the damage looks like.
You know, this is a great idea. I really like that, Alan. And I am so fortunate that I get to farm with my brother. Sometimes he drives me absolutely crazy. But one of the things that he did a few years ago is he allowed us to take a little strip on some ground that he owned. And he said, let's do this with a bunch of different nutrients and let's see how much is too much. And it was really interesting because you're right, Alan. We used a pretty large amount. And with some of the nutrients, we thought, oh, yeah, we'll for sure kill the crop with that. Didn't even come close. And then others we were much more sensitive to. So getting that balance right and kind of understanding where the edge of the cliff is before we fall off it is a good thing.
The only other thing I would mention, because boron is water soluble, what's the ideal level this year might not be exactly the same next year, depending on your rainfall. More rainfall you get, you might lose boron and need a little extra. So just keep the weather in mind. Some things aren't very weather sensitive, but that is. And if you don't have enough boron, your potassium is not going to work. So spend your money in the right place.
Now, last thing, Alan, when it comes to soil sampling, when we look at some of these leachables like boron, are you looking at deeper soil samples or are you primarily looking at 0 to 6 or 0 to 8?
We'll probably stick with a 0 to 6 to get a baseline that's consistent over time. We can always go look at special cases and that kind of thing. Anybody with tree crops, so pay attention to boron there too, especially. And you're not tilling the soil, so a little different depth might be necessary on an orchard crop. But we'll try to stick with a standard, whatever the practice has been, so you get a sense of what real is. The boron doesn't really hang around very well, so if you go deeper, it's probably going to get worse.
We love having Alan Perry.
Unless you're in California.
Love having Alan Perry from the Farm Technologies Network on our show. Always full of great advice. Alan, I take so many notes when I talk to you. Really appreciate having you on. Thanks for sharing everything, and thanks for doing what you do.
Hey, thank you.
Talking about boron on today's show, probably one of the more misunderstood nutrients. Got a few great pieces of advice there I want to talk about just a little bit more right after this break. We'll also be taking your calls and agronomic questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean and weed-free his entire field looked. I'm, like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and its burn-down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the Endzone Fan Control System from FarmShop MFG. Hot spots and moisture in your bin can cost you thousands in lost revenue. The Endzone monitors outside conditions to run your fans exactly when you want them to, naturally bringing your grain to ideal temperature and humidity. Master bin management with the Endzone. For more information, visit FarmShopMFG.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AgBiome.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. Today on the show we're talking about boron and just a few more things that we need to cover. Let's start with this, dry versus liquid. Well, liquid borons are popular, and don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting you don't use liquid boron. But if, let's say, you have heavy soil like us, without a lot of rainfall, so you're not nearly as worried about leaching as many other people are going to be, what would you do in terms of dry versus liquid? Well, the thing is, the dry is so much cheaper for building a soil. It's roughly 1/5 to even potentially 1/10 the price of liquid. So if I needed pounds, if I really felt like I needed to build up soil, then that would be the direction I would go. Liquid is great for a little bit of in-furrow stuff, especially like 2x2, I wouldn't do a whole lot in-furrow. But foliar, that's where a lot of people are talking about, hey, I'm going to use boron, it's going to be foliar. Okay, well, obviously, then we're talking liquid. Also, this pre versus post thing, again, it's going to depend a lot on what your situation is. So for us, without irrigation, and I'm trying to figure out how do I farm as inexpensively as possible, yet get all the nutrients out there that I need, we've really been looking at comparing this whole dry boron thing at big time rates, trying to build the soil up, and how long will the soil stay there? That's a question. Along with, hey, let's supplement a little bit doing some post-emerge boron work. So we've gotten some really good yields after doing some of these different treatments. And I don't know. I don't know that I necessarily have the answer yet. I don't know exactly what the right soil test level is. I don't know exactly what the right tissue test level is, because I'll go back a couple years ago where I had at our Ag PhD field day some 306 bushel corn, 306. And 10 out of 12 tests said I was deficient on boron. So when you look at that, you go, wait a second here. That's not very good. There's no way I should be able to get that kind of yield, yet I did. Now, I will say I had put on a whole bunch of boron pre-emerge with dry, and then I had gone with very light rates, 4x foliar, very light. So I barely spent anything foliar on boron, but did what I applied between the pre and the post, did that make a difference? I mean, according to the tissue test, it didn't. But according to the yield, I mean, I got 306 bushel corn. I'm not going to complain about that.
All right, let's jump on to the back onto our callers here. We've got Paul Borges with us out in California. And I didn't think we could talk about boron without catching your attention just a little bit. So are we on the right track here? Or are you finding some things you're like, oh man, guys, you're missing it on this?
No, you guys are on track. Here in California, we do have a couple of creeks and watersheds that do have boron in them. And calcium is the key to keep the crop from burning. In those areas, we got to keep the calcium above 72, maybe to 75% on the base saturation. Because we got places that will have, they'll have boron at 5 parts per million.
Oh, wow.
And we'll keep the crops. And that's the only way you can keep the crop from burning is adding calcium. So we might run gypsum in the water, depending on the irrigation system. But calcium is the key to controlling high boron levels here.
Yeah, having it be toxic to the plant. Yeah, Paul, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about yet was because everybody gets so worried about, oh, boron's going to kill the crop, and I go, well, we've been using big-time rates, like literally applying 4.5 pounds of actual boron in front of our corn crop as a dry, and it hasn't hurt one thing yet. In fact, we've had the best yields we've ever had, but we have really high calcium levels. Usually our calcium levels are 70 or 80%, something like that. Plus we have very heavy soil, very high cation exchange capacity. So, I mean, those two things are the biggest factors that I see. So yeah, I agree with you. If you have low calcium and light soil, you got to be really careful with what you're doing with boron, because absolutely that 4.5 pounds that I can put on, that might kill somebody else's crop.
Oh, heck yeah. Now over here, now definitely we get walnut orchards that look like they got torched before they get to harvest because they don't have enough calcium in them.
Yeah, I can believe
that. Another thing that we use, another thing is our seed crops. We really watch the boron and manganese are real key to set and for seed crops like we grow squash or beans for seed.
Yep.
We bring up those levels on those two elements, and it's amazing what they'll put out.
Yep, absolutely. And this is why we were talking earlier in the show about, hey, when you're doing your soil testing this fall, just do us a favor and get a complete test done. It'll be doing, in effect, yourself a favor, because what you might find is you don't need as much N, P, and K. And if you just invest a few dollars in something like a boron or manganese sometimes, that can make a lot of difference. And anymore, you know, it's not like we're all getting rich farming. It's tough on the farm. So we can't just be throwing a bunch of money out there and just hoping for the best. I guess I really encourage everybody, get some data. And when you have that data, use that data to manage your farm a little bit better. Stick your dollars where it will give you a positive return. But, you know, the other problem that we've got, Paul, is a lot of people look at nutrients like boron and manganese. They might see them in the soil test and they go, well, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. And then you get a lot of, well, seriously. And then a lot of the people that are making the fertilizer recommendations are the people selling the N, P, and K. So they go, well, I wouldn't worry too much about that. Just here, I got all kinds of N, P, and K for you.
Yeah. When it comes to seed crops, we make sure that our manganese is above 50 parts per million and our boron is close to 2 parts per million. And we've had pretty good success with all the seed crops we grow around here.
Now, are you talking Malic 3 test, or, I mean, when you say your parts per million levels, what type of test are you using to get that?
The Kinsey.
Yeah. Yep, and that's one of the big things that we talk to people about on a regular basis. Every lab may do this a little bit differently. So when we start throwing out numbers, we try to qualify that by saying it that, hey, it's at this particular lab. So we commonly use Midwest labs, and they run a DTPA, but I really like a Malic 3 test. And the Malic 3 seems like that's real similar to what Neil has, to Neil Kinsey's lab.
Yeah. Now, it's amazing. You get those numbers close. It's amazing what will show up on the crop. Doesn't take a lot.
No, I agree with you. Paul, any last comments on our topic, boron, today?
No, you guys have a good one.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, so I think we've covered most of the stuff with boron, but let me leave you with this. When you ask us, you might call and say, hey, guys, what's the right soil test level for boron? What's the right tissue test level for boron? Unfortunately, we don't have the answers to either of those questions. And I don't know anybody that does for every soil out there. Now, when we start talking certain soils and environments, I mean, again, I am looking for on my ground here where I have heavy soil, high calcium, not a lot of rainfall, and I'm not too worried about boron hurting anything. I don't know exactly where I need to be, but it's probably in the 5 to maybe even, who knows, 8 parts per million range on a DTPA test for boron. But again, if you've got sand and low calcium, you might only want 2 parts per million. So this is where we would encourage you, do some tests on your farm. And again, to safen that boron, get your calcium levels up, and high calcium is good for the soil anyway. So you in almost all cases want that calcium in the range of, let's call it 65 to 75%, somewhere in there on a base saturation test. So that will help your boron. That will also typically help your crop, help your soil, help your microbes. So that's a really, really big thing. And again, I want to come back to that plant tissue level. Nobody knows exactly where it's supposed to be at for every single crop at every single day during that growing season. But once you start running some tests and seeing where your good yields are coming from, you're going to start to get a good idea on your soil test level, on your tissue test level. But just understand, all crops need boron. Some crops need much more than others. So really take a hard look at that and run some trials on your own farm, pre versus post. You do some dry, do some liquid, but boron is a very, very essential nutrient. Well, we're going to get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag coming up next.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic fungicides from Atticus LLC. Fungal diseases can be devastating, but Acadia, Slant, and Talaris 4.5F from Atticus deliver lasting, broad-spectrum fungi control so your soybeans, sugar beets, and dry beans can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit MortonBuildings.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We've been talking about boron on the show today, but we've been getting a lot of questions in as well. Let's dive into the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
First one comes from Steve in Minnesota, and he said, we've been doing everything we can over the last couple of years to try to kill some fence line giant ragweeds. I've used Stinger, 240, Roundup at maximum concentrations. They just keep growing even taller. I'd like to get rid of them completely, but I want to try something after harvest here and or pre-plant next spring so I don't damage any crop that may be up around me. What would you suggest? Liberty, Grazon Next, Dicamba? I'm up for anything.
Liberty, no. Dicamba, probably not. Grazon Next, definitely not, because it's in a fence line next to a crop field, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Crop on either side.
Right. Yeah. So you can't put milestone there. You're going to have drift into the crop, and you're going to have issues when you raise broadleaf crops for the next couple, 3 years. So you can't do that. 2,4-D is what will work. And if 2,4-D hasn't worked in the past, that tells me you've done one or two things, most likely. Either not used a high enough rate, or there's just flat out been too much water.
I just think you've got big weeds. You got big weeds, and that's the challenge. In the fence line, it's generally the last thing people think about. It's the job when, okay, got everything else done. What can I do now? Oh, yeah, I can go clean up the fence lines. And we see this all the time, and we're probably guilty of it too, that the weeds get too big in some of those fence lines, and then you're going out there expecting 100% perfect-looking things like out in your field when you're controlling 3-inch, 4-inch tall weeds, and then all of a sudden you get some great big giant ragweeds. I remember growing up, there was a spot right by some of our livestock buildings where there was a weed, and it was literally 10 feet tall. And I remember asking him, like, what in the world is this weed? And somebody said ragweed, and I think my dad said, nope, that's giant ragweed. And I thought he just meant, oh, it's a very large ragweed plant. Nope, it was giant ragweed. That's the name of the weed. And yeah, it can get really big on you pretty fast. This is a weed that can get really tall, and it can happen quickly.
Yeah, the other thing you could do would be buck drill. So you could throw, let's say you did buck drill and 2,4-D together. But, I mean, you need to kill those weeds when they're 2 to 4 inches tall. And when you kill them when they're 2 to 4 inches tall, with the highest labeled rate, keeping the water volume down and have good spray coverage, it'll work phenomenally well. So we've never had any issue killing that, and you won't either if you just follow those steps.
All right, thank you. Really appreciate the question, Steve, and good luck. I get one from Jared here, and I wonder if this ties in a little bit to our topic today. He said, I'm getting upset. Our non-dicamba beans have been damaged from drift once again.
We don't know for sure that they're damaged. I'm going to guess. Now, are they cupped? That's very likely, and that's what he's talking about, I'm sure. But I go back to 3 years ago when we got all kinds of calls. That first year that dicamba got approved over the top of Xtend, and, I mean, just calls left and right. Well, who's going to pay for all this loss? And I go, well, wait a second. You've harvested your beans already? It's only July. And they go, well, no, but, I mean, you can see that they're damaged. No, they're cupped. So don't get me wrong, and I'm not trying to be a jerk about this thing, but I'm simply saying we don't know for sure that we've had yield loss. And in fact, that year, we had all kinds of farmers who had yield gain from the little bit of cupping that the dicamba caused. So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry I cut you off there, but I get very defensive about that because we can't say it's damage. We can say it's leaf cupping. We don't like it, and it may have hurt something, but we don't know for sure until we get to harvest. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, another question. Will nutrient levels impact...
Wait. Stop. What was the question? Finish the question.
He just said he was getting upset about the beans being damaged from drift.
Oh,
that was the main question. And then I was thinking about it. We were talking about soybeans and reducing damage by having nutrient levels right. If there is dicamba spread on non-dicamba beans, for example, you aren't going to save them by getting nutrients in balance. That's if it's a big dose. But it may lessen some of the stress in a mild situation like Brian's talking about, where we just see some leaf cupping.
Yes, from volatilization, and it's light cupping. Yes, having the right nutrients there and obviously the right moisture and right everything else, you're in better shape. But what I'm not going to argue with is this. It doesn't make any of us farmers look good when we're cupping somebody else's beans. We can't have that. So, I'm going to argue that we don't necessarily know we have damage yet. I am not going to argue that I don't like it. That is not a good thing for any of us in agriculture, and that's why a lot of people are switching away from dicamba moving forward. So we just think there's going to be tremendous demand here this fall for Enlist soybeans and for Xtend Flex soybeans and for LLGT27 soybeans. So a guy can go spray Liberty post-emerge instead of spraying dicamba. Or like on the Enlist beans, you can go spray the new 2,4-D, which isn't volatilizing or causing drift issues like the dicamba. So, I mean, there are options. options out there, and I would just encourage you, look into those and be really careful when you're using the dicamba. Now, I'll also say it may not have come out of beans. It may have come out of corn. We had crazy amounts of that in our region because a lot of people were spraying corn much later than normal, in part because they were using the safe inversions, whether it was Dyflex or Status. And, well, on the label, it says I can spray it till corn's, whatever, 20 inches tall. I'm going, oh, my gosh, don't do that, because you know it's going to drift all over the country. So just be careful when you're out there spraying dicamba. We don't want to hurt anybody else's crop. And soybeans are just super crazy sensitive to dicamba. A tiny whiff, and they get cupped. Now, yes, most of the time they aren't hurt in terms of yield, but it still looks bad. It still gets people upset, and we just can't have it moving forward, because otherwise, the more of this kind of stuff that happens, the more regulated we're going to get. And I don't know about you, but I don't want any more regulations. I got more than enough regulations as a farmer, so let's stop the regulations. And one of the ways we can stop that is if we don't cup other people's beans.
All right, thanks for the question and comment. We got this one from CB, who says, I'm wondering how you would treat sweet corn differently on the fertilizer removal app. Would you consider the fertilizer needs for a sweet corn crop the same as field corn, or what would you use as a gauge?
I was just looking to see on our Ag PhD fertilizer.
So first of all, the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app is a free download for your smartphone or tablet. It's super popular, and the reason why, you can type in just about any crop, type in what your yield goal is, and you can see exactly what you'd need for nutrients to produce that crop. Not only crop removal, but also what you're going to see for stover needs too. And that's a big one.
Yeah, and we don't specifically have sweet corn on there. Would it be similar to field corn? Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be similar. So, you know, one of the big differences, I would say, Darren, is sweet corn gets planted at a much lower population typically, so the ears get bigger. So that is a little bit different. And you might say, well, how does that change really anything in terms of nutrients? Well, first of all, you're going to have less total bushels that actually get produced off of there. So instead of, I mean, for me, I might be shooting for a 250 bushel yield goal. Well, with sweet corn, you know, if you wanted to convert that over, it might be 150. I don't know. I'm not a sweet corn producer. But I'm just saying, in general, yes, the nutrient needs of sweet corn are going to be pretty similar to field corn. It's just usually we aren't going for the big time goals. We maybe don't need quite as much fertilizer. But let's put it this way. Our topic today was boron, and we talked a lot about micronutrients today. Micronutrients are a big key if you want good tasting vegetables, period. I don't care what vegetables we're talking about. So make sure you have good levels of micronutrients. Make sure you have good levels of sulfur in that sweet corn. And generally speaking, you're going to have much happier customers.
All right. One last question here. And this one is from Carol, who says, I'm wondering, can you tell me what the advantage to deep land plowing is? I see lots of videos online where they may be going down even 3 feet with two or three tractors pulling that plow. Is there a reason why people would do that?
Well, we only have about 20 seconds here, so let me just say, stirring things around in the ground sometimes can be beneficial. Sometimes it's about breaking up compaction layers. And
that's exceptionally deep, though, and deeper than row crop
it
farmers
is,
would be
it
telling.
It is, but there are some natural compaction layers down in the soil. And if, let's say, you went down to 3 feet one time, or maybe I know there's some people that have gone down to 8 feet just one time, that's it. And hopefully then they can start getting more roots down deeper in the soil. Those are probably the reasons why a lot of people are looking at it, but you also have a lot of people that do no-till and are big believers in that as well.
Thanks for that question, Carol. And thanks for all the questions that came in today. We really appreciate that. Thanks for listening to our show. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.